Accession number 28626, reel 9.
Out on patrol in radar camp or out to the keys, which was great. Whilst it was an operational tour, you did have, the soldiers did have an opportunity to have a week of what we call R&R, rest and recuperation, and we had established an R&R centre on the coast, about halfway down between Belize City and Rideau, and Captain Neil Ogilvie ran that that centre, which is really for windsurfing, snorkelling, a bit of water skiing, a bit of fishing, that sort of thing. Just a chance for the guys to get out of the jungle, because I personally, I loved it, but some people didn't. They found it a bit claustrophobic and hot, and they just didn't enjoy it. We all react differently. I used to wander around in a pair of flip-flops and a pair of shorts, and the snakes would disappear. But other folk had to see a beetle and run a mile.
And was there anything there which could attack you in that jungle? Was there anything there that could, apart from maybe the snakes, which could have been poisonous or anything?
Yeah, there was poisonous snakes. There was scorpions, some spiders, leeches. But if you mean other things, that there would have been caimans in the river. There were some very, very nasty stingrays in the sea, barracuda, hammerhead sharks. I mean, you had to be sensible. There was a very good sergeant in the gunners called Zeb Spring, who I played rugby with in the army, and he unfortunately stood on the barb of a stingray, which was lying just under the sand. And he just walked in, and the barb of the stingray's tail went right through his shoe into his foot. He was paralysed within moments, and if I recall, to save his life, they had to amputate his leg. Now that was a real shock, because this was one seriously fit and hard man, played fantastic rugby for the army. And here he was, got by a natural predator, if I can say that, by accident. He wasn't trying to stand on it, he didn't know it was there, and it didn't disappear, it just got at me, put his foot down.
And the camp that you were in, did it have facilities to deal with that, or did he have to get airlifted out?
The facilities were in Rideau Camp. Rideau Camp was it was probably 2 acres in size. It had a fence around it. It had a series of corrugated Nissen huts and Atap huts. It was with palm trees on the roof. It had a small battalion headquarters, which was probably 3 rooms. There was stores, there were platoon huts, a bar. There was a big monsoon ditch around the middle of it, a little sports field in the middle, which is tiny, the sort of size of a large tennis court. They played football and baseball and basketball. And then there was a hairy landing pad, but that was outside the fence, on a big sort of scrolly bit that was cleared, and they built a platform out of the sort of the scrubby bit, because it was prone to getting flooded. Therefore, they raised this platform, and they had a big fuel bowser there, a big portable soft fuel bowser, so that the helicopters could come in, land on this hard standing, suck on some fuel, and disappear again. And it was about a mile, I suppose, from Rideau, the village of Rideau, if I can use that expression, on the coast.
What type of villages were they as well? I've heard people describing maybe villages in Borneo or something,
These were, you'd have a number of concrete prefabricated buildings there. Normally, these are buildings associated with the government, or people who had a bit more money, and had built airy concrete prefab buildings. Some had glass in, some didn't. But the majority of the Belizeans lived in huts, type huts, which was home to them. They took a pounding when the hurricanes came in, but they just rebuilt them. So there wasn't, whereas the concrete buildings or the ones in Belize City took a real hammering, and they could be badly damaged. So the infrastructure wasn't great. Let's not kid ourselves. It wasn't great.
And was there any Europeans across there?
The thing that was across there, an awful lot of Americans. I mean, a staggering amount of Americans who dropped out, hippies, who liked the way of life in Belize, and they were very strange on the whole. Had to avoid them because they were anti-war. Let's remember that Vietnam was still very in the forefront of their minds, and they just some of them had been in Vietnam and had to get back to that sort of thing, but didn't want to go back there, but wanted to live in the jungle and just live a very strange life, you know, smoking whatever they wanted to smoke and shooting whatever they wanted to shoot. Some strange characters. Some also some very genuine ones, but the majority were strange.
And when you mentioned that as well, I was thinking about the standards that you would normally keep, you know, like your hair short, clean, and all this. I don't mean to slip, but did things change out there when you maybe grew a beard and that? No,
certainly not. Standards were definitely maintained, probably more so. You've got to stay clean. I know that today in Afghanistan and in some places in Iraq, they are allowed to grow beards because actually that has some standing with the local population, is an easier way of communicating with them. Certainly in Belize that was not the case. Funny enough, most of the Belizeans are not that hairy, so they don't tend to grow beards. Their skin is a lovely sort of, you know, dark brown colour. The Guatemalans are the same. They're not heavy on the growth, so we all tended to be clean shaven. The hair was certainly kept short. It was much easier to keep it short because you could see if the leases had dropped onto you, you know, you could identify them straightforwardly. And people like to keep themselves clean because it was a very sweaty, humid environment, and you needed to make sure you were dry all the time because you get prickly heat, which is very uncomfortable. So we were very conscious about hygiene.
And was it easy to keep yourself clean? Because, you know, you mentioned earlier that the water, you know, was brown and that. But was it clean or was it quite dirty?
The water itself was siltful. It wasn't sewage, it was silt. So if you went into it, you would come out looking orange. You know, because it's tiny particles of silt would catch in your arm hair or whatever. So you would, when you went out on patrol for 4 days, for 8 days, when you came back, you were stinking. Your clothes, you tended to wear the same stuff because you got wet, which is great. It then dried on you. You then sweated again. Quite often you were patrolling in mangrove swamps and you were up to your waist in water. And you had to watch, you know, waterborne parasites, fish that would come and clean you. So there were some hidden nasties, but as long as you were aware of them, and that's another reason why you always check yourself, always clean yourself, or you've got someone else to check you, you know, make sure you haven't got anything nasty on you, and if they did, they'd do something about it. Mm.
And did you ever have problems like that? You know, were you ever bitten or anything from anything in the water?
No, I don't recall any problems. There were people who were bitten by scorpions, bitten by mosquitoes. I don't know of anybody getting malaria, because we were, I'm not sure even if malaria is prevalent out there, but we were on a couple of tablets, but I don't recall taking malaria tablets, but I could be wrong. But I think that there were people who were more susceptible than others. Some got bitten by snakes, probably because they razzed the snake up. The most dangerous snake was a foot and lance, and that was an aggressive little snake. It wasn't a big snake, but it was an aggressive snake. There were other ones. There was a green tree viper, which thought the best sport in the world was to launch itself from a tree at the Land Rovers. And it was really quite scary because you had no control where this thing was going to land, and it would open its mouth with these huge fangs and attach itself to the Land Rover. Fortunately, nobody got bitten by any of these things. We shot the odd snake, ate the odd snake, ate the odd iguana. All very tasty. You've got to do it. You know, try it, everybody said it tastes like chicken. Well, I'm afraid it does. It's pretty boring.
And was this more like if you were out on patrol in the jungle?
Yeah. I mean, occasionally you get a snake that's in the camp, it would be killed. And one of the, I think it was a doctor, Dr. Ozzie Pieri, who didn't, I'm afraid, finish the tour on a very high note. He got done for using morphine himself, injecting himself with morphine as a doctor. You know, God. But he got a 16-foot snake and killed that and skinned it. You know, had the big skin on parade. Yeah, but whilst you don't really want to kill all these things just for the sake of it, there were occasions where you had no options. You got rid of them and they came back again. And they were a potential threat to life. In some of these constricting ones, I thought that you sleep there and suddenly find that this thing wrapped itself around you.
But was that maybe part of the training as well, that you maybe, you know, learnt which ones that you were okay to...
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Dave Stewart took the company to Edinburgh Zoo, to the reptile house, and they were introduced to all these things, and these jocks are holding these things, you know, oh, fantastic, I've got this, and so they were learning all the time about, you know, what to look for and which ones to be more worried about. The truth is you shouldn't be worried about any of them, because they're more scared of you than you are of them, but if you just go about things in a sensible way, the chances are you won't see them. But this now and again, there were some that were too key.
Okay. And you also mentioned going through the swamps. What kind of footwear did you wear, you know, to do jobs like that?
They're called jungle boots, what they are. They're canvas side boots. We actually bought them off the Americans, because the Americans had years of trialing them and improving them as a result of Vietnam. But they had a quite a hard rubber sole with a metal plate in it. And this is to stop landmines. Personnel mines. And there's a canvas top with just a draw cord, and you just pulled your laces up and tie them off. So they went up above your ankle. They were actually very good boots, and they could take any amount of getting wet and dry, and would last you, well, mine lasted me for a lot longer than my 4 months in Belize, but I had them for years after that. Most folks would last them 6 months, because to be fair, the soldiers were out on patrol more often than I was, because I was 2IC. I hadn't got my own platoon to control, so I was doing all the other little administrative things to make sure their life was good and they were resupplied or were collected and this sort of thing. So I wasn't out on patrol every week, but I did go out on certain things. Or when one of the platoon commanders was away on R&R, I would take his platoon or half his platoon out to do something.
What does 2IC mean?
Second in command.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And was there any threat from mines there?
No.
Okay. And when you said as well that you bought the boots, was that the British Army bought the boots, or did you...
No, the British Army bought the boots. Yeah. No, we had our own set of jungle boots, which had been trialled in the UK over years, and they just weren't good enough. And somebody quite rightly said, look, the ads have done this. They've got a good boot. Let's just buy... You know, let's just buy 50,000 pairs. Come on, so we did.
Okay. And what about for coverage on your legs and that as well? Did you wear long trousers or did you wear a short for something? We're just finishing off this section where we've been speaking about Belize, and there was a few questions that I wanted to ask you. And one of them was relaxation when you were across there. You know, maybe at the end of a day or whenever you got some free time. What did you do then? You know.
I quite like to walk, and I would go out into the jungle around the camp, a pair of flip-flops, a pair of shorts, and just wander around and listen to the jungle. The problem you have to remember is that it gets light at 6 in the morning and it gets dark at 6 at night. So there's, you know, and it's very hot in the middle of the day, so we tend to work. We get up and we go and do PE first thing in the morning. Go out for a run along some of the tracks of the roads, and then come back, shower, have breakfast, and then work to about midday, 1 o'clock maybe. Then there'd be siesta, and you'd do nothing between 1 and sort of 3:30, 4, and then you'd have a couple of hours after that, and it's dark. So relaxation was taken either a bit of sunbathing in the Neil hammocks, because there's lots of hammocks out there. Or I'd go for a walk. Quite often we played sport. If we wanted a bit of fun, we'd go and play some five-a-side football, a bit of basketball or volleyball within the camp. There wasn't any water near us, so we couldn't go and swim as such. You know, the places that you could go and swim were always a truck drive away, and we were a little reluctant to do that. And indeed, you know, none of us ran around in Land Rovers or four-ton vehicles. It was it was sensibly managed because you just didn't know quite what was going to happen. You were on an operational tour, and you I suppose had to expect anything to happen, so you couldn't just disappear. So that's what we normally do. You got on with the task at hand, and when you got time to relax, sleeping, I go for a walk in the jungle, just around the camp. So if anything happened, you could actually hear over the tannoy system, which was 150 yards away, what was going on. And I'd always tell someone where I was going, just in case I got bitten by something or fell over or whatever. But never a problem. But that was really it.
Okay, and you mentioned sunbathing then. Was there ever any occasions when in India you got sunburnt, and was it still punishment?
Absolutely. Nick and Elle. Lieutenant Nick and Elle, one of our platoon commanders, he got sunburned very, very badly. Very badly indeed. Chargeable offence, he was charged. And I think it cost him a lot of money. Because it was a self-inflicted wound, but he was ill for 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, really, really bad. You can get sunburned when you were snorkeling out at the Keys. You go out there occasionally when you on a sailor a day off. You go out there. I suppose this could be a relaxation, but sometimes you're going out there because you had to go visit the Keys and you stayed 3 days. And during your time there, you go for a swim. But the sun's rays would easily penetrate the water down to 5-6 feet. So if you're snorkeling around in beautiful, clear, cold water, even for half an hour you come out and you really have to be careful. Slap the old cream on, get the old shirts back on because you'd be red. And a lot of people were caught out, but not as badly as Nick and Elle, who I don't know what he was thinking of.
And at that time as well, did you have like cream for protection?
The army did issue you with some cream. Certainly wasn't high factor, it wasn't as smart as today's Amber Solera or anything, but if you were sensible, you used it. Not all the jocks were, but you can only tell them so many times and lead the horse to water, but it actually makes any difference. Anyhow, the army did issue that sort of stuff.
And this man who had sunburnt and it lasted a few weeks, the problem with it, did he go to his bed or was he?
He had to be medevaced. He had to be medevaced up to APC camp, which is the main camp of Belize City. He was in a bad way. I don't know how many layers of skin he burned, but it wasn't just one or two. In some places, he took months to heal. So he was then not available to do his job. So I'm sure Colonel Gavin Peebles, who was a CO, had no option but to. Fine him heavily for his stupidity, because it was a warning to everybody. I mean, perhaps some people had got away with it or had a better resistance to temperatures like that. I mean, he was quite a fair-skinned guy, but bad.
And so he would have had to pay money with a proper fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And when I was thinking about that as well, the likes of yourself, that there are a few of that. Could you also issue someone with a fine or a punishment or anything, if they did something wrong?
If I was standing in for the company commander, the company commander's away, and I had to do, I would be given authority on battalion routine orders to conduct company orders in the absence of Major McLean. Yes, I could, if that was the proper fitting punishment, award a fine.
Okay, and
I certainly couldn't put them to jail.
Did you have a jail across
there? Yeah, there was a holding cell. Yeah, because like all things, sometimes the boys got a hand with drink and had to be put somewhere for their own safety and watched by the guard.
And this is at the camp where you're at.
Ridout camp, yeah.
And were they allowed a certain amount of drink per day or something?
I don't recall if there was an allocation. They certainly There was a company bar there, and the officers' mess had their own bar, the sergeant's mess had their own bar, and the soldiers had a bar. There may have been a corporal's mess bar as well, I don't quite recall, but there was a bar area, and really only beer was available. I don't think there were too many spirits. There may have been some rum, but in the officers' mess had their normal selection. I'm sure sergeants' mess did as well. But there were only about 10, 12 officers there, and the sergeants' mess wise probably 20. There weren't huge establishments. There were 140 odd jocks and corporals and last corporals, so that they had a fairly thriving business. And occasionally, we'd go down to Riddell village itself, and we'd go to the local hotel or pub. I say hotel, it was a hotel, it wasn't a pub, because they didn't know what pubs were. But you'd be able to go in there and you'd buy a beer, bottled beer, some of it quite strong stuff, all local, or all acquired locally. And you go sit down the veranda and have a beer and just watch life go past.
Was there any occasions when the locals would come to the camp, either to work in it or to maybe try and sell the men anything?
Funny you say that. Yes, the locals did work in the camp. Cleaners, lovely old lady called Vera. She cleaned the officers' mess. And she used to clear our rooms. And we all had a sort of a 10x4 space each in this Nissen hut. It was our bed, we had a bed and a metal locker. And I had a lovely old blazer which got mildew. I'd obviously worn it to come out to Belize, thinking proper thing to do, made a blazer, black blazer. Got there, and obviously it had been a hot journey and there must have been lots of moisture within the jacket. I put it in the cupboard, and after about a month, Vera had been there. I hadn't even been in the cupboard, she'd been in there cleaning it. And this thing came out, it's white. She came to me and said, Saab Gibson, there's your jacket. And I said, oh, it's a pretty, just chuck it. Oh, Saab, can I have it? I said, yeah, you can have it. She cleaned it up, and had one either a husband or a son wore it. And I thought, brilliant. Because, I would never have, I thought it was beyond it. It was sink. I don't know what she did to it, but she did something to it, and it came back, and I saw it being worn, so I know it was done. But it was great because I hardly ever wore a blazer. But they did work in the camp, and they were nice folk. They were, good sort of Caribbean, decent, smiling folk. They weren't all like that. There were some around who liked to take machetes to people, but they didn't work in the camp. You just didn't marry them when you were outside. And occasionally, playing football against the local town, we always won. But by God, it was rough.
So you were having that connections with them.
I mean, I think that was the case because they actually relied on the army there for a lot of things. And there's a few perks. You were cleaning things properly. You were looking after things properly. Occasionally, I'm sure some of the ration packs would say, "Look, take those. We don't need them because it's going to go off. We've got everything open here, so we need." So they get the odd can of peaches or tuna in a tin, whatever. Which nobody begrudged them because they were doing a decent job. They were doing all the nasty jobs in the heat nobody else would do.
And you touched on a couple of subjects there. One was, I was wondering about fresh produce, but you also mentioned before that someone was growing things.
Mm. Oh yeah, we had Jim Essen, who's our quartermaster in Battlebrook South, Bellarida. He grew out of the back of the officer's mess, Attap hut, cucumbers and marrows. And they were brilliant. It was a great competition to see what you could grow. And he tilled the soil and he put his canes in and he had all these things growing. And it was hugely successful. With the amount of humidity and rainfall and the heat, and you could grow you'd grow a cucumber in a third of the time than you would in a greenhouse over here. And the thing would be 18 inches long and absolutely delicious. And I'm not a cucumber fan, but I had to take my hat off to him. Yeah, these things grew very well. That said, you have to be wary that a lot of other what are now drugs like cannabis would also grow very well, and you had to make sure that this wasn't being cultivated. Hopefully not knowingly, but we did see cannabis growing all over the place, and I don't think I'm pretty sure none of the jocks were involved in it. It wasn't in the camp, but. It was there, and you just said, that's one of those funny plants, isn't it? Yeah, so things did grow very well.
Did you grow anything?
I was part of the competition to see who could grow the biggest marrows and cucumbers. And we didn't do badly, but Jim Essen always seemed to win. He must have had some secret potion fed him, I tell you, because his were always better than ours. Otherwise, rations were, they were flown in from APC camp up north in Fakhrud North in Belize City, and there was always the Pumas were flying in. The ration run would be at least once a week, so the Puma would be full, and they would have an underslung load on. And it took an hour to fly from Belize City to Rideau, or just over an hour. So it's a fair distance away. The only unfortunate thing was that they never ever managed to get ice cream to us. In all my time there, we were the poor relations when it came to ice cream. It would always melt, was the excuse. I'm now sure they already ever eating it before it got to us, but we were the poor relations. Belize City had lots of ice cream, Rideau in the south, none. Back to life.
And was it just like normal food that you get back in Britain or something you were being supplied with? Or?
Really army rations. So we were talking food taken out of 24-hour or 10-man ration packs. And to be honest, the cooks are very good at doing this. That was the staple thing. Now, every Sunday, we would have a roast. That was sort of the done thing. And I remember Ian Charles Semple, who was the adjutant at the time.
Was he the adjutant?
No, he, I don't think he was the adjutant, but he was a young major doing something. It might have been the intelligence side of Battle Group South, working with Gallagher Peoples. And he insisted on carving lessons, you know, to make sure that all the officers could carve. Well, fortunately, I was well brought up by my grandfather and my father, so I could carve. So I had, he challenged me one day to say, right, come on in, let's see you carve this piece of meat. It was a lamb. And I knew exactly what to do, how to, what angle to take it out, to go with the grain. And he said, ah, okay, so you can carve. So I was then not asked to carve again. And the others were asked to carve, and we had some laughs, because there was chunk meat, there was ragged meat, there was so thin there was no meat, or there were great big bits like doorstops, you know, and it was highly amusing. And but I'm quite sure those there who were present, about, you know, 10 of the younger ones, I'll say younger ones, I'm not the younger ones, but 10 of them then learned how to carve from Ian Charles Simple. So it was very funny.
And it sounds as though you've still got that kind of formal idea of a mess there. You know, you've got the carving and everything. But was it a formal mess that you had, or was it...?
No, I mean, the mess is an institution. It has... We have a set of mesh rules, and wherever we go in the world, the state of the mesh rules apply. We didn't have to wear jackets at dinner. You would get away with wearing a shirt and a tie and a pair of slacks. You had to have shoes on, you couldn't come in flip-flops. So there were definite standards, and absolutely nobody would begrudge those, because that's what officers mess about. You know, you don't go somewhere and say, well, I'm just going to do my own thing and turn on a pair of dirty combats and no shoes on. So everybody was assembled on time, pre-dinner drinks or whatever, you know, glass of lemonade, fresh fruit juice, and then you'd sit down all together and eat your meal. Breakfast was different, because breakfast, some people didn't take breakfast, others did. Some people wanted just a fruit juice or a cup of tea, others wanted a full breakfast. So breakfast was done in the same way that it's always been done. Lunch, again, it was a working environment, so you weren't always there, so it was different. But nighttime, always properly done. You were expected to be on parade, I think it was like 6:45 or 7 o'clock, and you would eat at 7:30, 7:45. And then you'd be finished. By sort of 8:45, you might then relax, read a book. All the cicadas would be making noises everywhere. You might sometimes we watch a film. We'd set up a screen and run a movie. I remember we all watched Diana and Charles's wedding. I don't know how many times on the DVD we'd been sent, but because he was colonel of the regiment of the Gordon Highlanders, we were obviously keen to witness this. And we had sent the winning president across, so that was you know, we were all quite enthusiastic about that going on. So we watched that a couple of times. And we had the old film night. The Puma would fly in with some films, and we'd have a look at it, South Smith would look at it, and the lads would look at it. And it would be with it for a week, and it would fly away again. But they'd all see it. And it normally ran in the jocks' place a couple of times in a week, because they wouldn't all be in. So It was on a, well, actually on loop, but it was more frequent there.